Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 10, season 9, the last one of the season. I've been on countdown for the last three and I'll keep mentioning it. The reason why I'm probably making it much of a countdown is because during our little two-week break, I think Junior is about to arrive. That's Junior Simpson, not Junior Bennion or Junior Champion. It better hadn't be anyway, otherwise it could be the most messy episode of Jeremy Kyle ever. Anyway, I get sidetracked. I normally at this point in the podcast, I say hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson.
And then on my right, I will say hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello, Tony and Jack.
Jack, there you go. It's good. I think, do you know what this is like? This is like Friday afternoon in podcast world, right? Where it's kind of, you finish at five, it's half four, quarter to five. So we have a bit of a, we relax a little bit because it's the last episode of the podcast. There's loads of stuff coming on a bit later on the podcast. But for us three, we can relax and just talk about rallying. Nothing new there, of course. But Jack Bennion, we're gonna start as ever. We always start with your illustrious paper which you write for. And teenager Robin Perra to tackle two WRC rounds. Finished prospect to join M Sport in R5 Fiesta. Nothing new apart from the fact that it's now going to be two events.
Yeah, it is going to be two events, GB and Australia as well, I believe. But not the interesting part of the story for me. The interesting part is the part where Timo Jocke refers to driving for M Sport and WRC2 and the BRC next season as a second option, which is very interesting given the fact that just a few weeks ago it seemed nailed on that Cali would be driving for M Sport and WRC2 and BRC, and I believe a certain journalist who is going to remain nameless at this point said that he was certain that Cali was going to be an M Sport car next year, and now said journalist is not so convinced reading the quotes that he's seen in MN this week. Plus there's quite a few clashes next year which are going to make BRC quite difficult, I think. So very sad for the British Championship that Robin Perra is not going to be around, but I think it's probably the right choice for him.
I was just about to say, we're already in the realms, aren't we, Rye, of drivers, and you know Cali is dare I say enigma? It's not probably enigma, it's probably not the right word, but there's something obviously special about him for what he's been doing for all these years. But we're back in the realms of bypassing the rungs on the ladders, but he kind of did the rungs on the ladders with R2 cars when he wasn't even double figures age-wise, was he?
Yeah, he's done it in terms of machinery, hasn't he? Yeah. He just hasn't done it in the conventional sense because he hasn't been old enough to do the rallies. Obviously, we have seen young drivers coming in at a high level before, and it normally still takes. You know, it'll be interesting to see how he does get on at the highest level, because it normally takes the young drivers a little bit of time to bed in. And you know, if you think of the likes of the Andreas Mikkelsens and the Jari Matti Latvalas, both of whom were in World Rally cars when they were when they were 17, when they got to World Championship level, it did take them a while. Robin Perra has done that many miles, and obviously he's been doing things like the Italian Championship this year with the 208, which is, you know, fantastic experience. That it'll be good to see where he is in the process, and at least he's coming in at WRC2. You know, he's not coming in a full blown WRC car, and I mean that in terms of, again, I think that'll help his progression. It'll help his grounding to get the best out of the WRC2 car and then move to the WRC car. And they are two very different machines, and it is two different levels. You know, we've seen drivers that have been dominant and incredibly quick at WRC2 level or Super 2000 level, not quite make it in WRC. But you know, everybody's obviously very excited to see what he does. And well, I think we'd all be surprised if he wasn't very, very fast, wouldn't we?
Absolutely. Jack Bennion, are you feeling that he's nailed on at Hyundai?
No, I'm not feeling that he's nailed on, but I think the quotes are very interesting. That, like I said, Timo, who, you know, has been the guiding light of many of these drivers and many of Ryan's just mentioned there, and you know, he's talking about it being a second option to go to M Sport. So very, very interesting turnaround in the space of a month and a half.
I guess, you know, we speculated last time, you were adamant last time, by the way, that's exactly what was going to happen, which always gives me a wry smile when we have to go back to a story, Jack Bennion.
Yeah, I'll cheers, level mate. With you. Just rub that in. I'll give that a good stroke.
Steady. You're doing your own jokes in your own head now. Where I was going with this, of course, is that obviously if indeed it is Hyundai, he's not finding budget. Timo Jocke is not finding budget. M Sport, Of course, we know he's got a fine budget. So that's purely what it's going to come down to, surely.
I'm not so sure. I mean, we've not seen the, you know, the detailed sort of specifics of the Hyundai drive, have we? We know the driver's going to be works backed in some way. And you can make your own assumptions about that, but we've not seen an actual breakdown of, you know, if the driver actually needs to bring anything to these prizes. I'm sure, there's many shootouts out there that, you know, deem themselves to be funded drives. And then when you actually get down to it, there's a, you know, the driver does need to bring a certain amount of budget or, different things depending on the, you know, the small print of the contract. So, it'd be interesting to see about Hyundai, but also we're forgetting that he's not actually won it yet and he's got a fair bit of competition to go up against. So, we can't nail on the fact that he's going to be driving a Hyundai next year in WRC2 until he's actually won this competition.
Very tactfully put there, Jack Bengen. Very tactfully put, it has to be said. I think it's interesting. What I hope I'm kind of... It's one of those things where... Don't get me wrong, it's slightly different because he is doing it. He is clearly achieving results and everything else. But I almost feel like we could be putting pressure on the lad before it even starts, right?
Inevitably, there's going to be... I don't know whether he'll feel the pressure, but certainly the spotlight will be on him, won't it? Because, we saw the videos of him driving the Corolla in Finland when he was, I don't know, what was he, 10, 12, whatever he was. And so we've all seen him around for, a good few years now. So inevitably, once he gets into the mainstream events, the WRC events, then people are going to want to see what he's all about. He's had the grounding though. He's done the rallies, he's done the cross section of rallies, he's done the mileage. So, there's no doubt he'll go very well. Will he, is he a world champion in the making? Well, I guess we'll just have to see when he gets a little bit further on. I'm sure Timo Jokke's hope is that he's going to be, he's going to be a world champion of the future. Jokke's stable was used to producing world champions. He was involved with Kankinen and obviously heavily involved with Mäkinen, but then the Rovanperäs, the Gardameisters, the Hirvonens, and even the Latvalas really probably haven't quite delivered at the level that Timo Jokke was hoping.
There you go. Well, wait and see, I guess. Wait and see. Jack Bengen, your hero, has been driving on gravel again.
He has. Where have you seen this, Tony? It's a pretty secret story, I heard.
Were you not there, Jack Bengen, then?
Page 14, I was going.
You're his biggest fan and you didn't get invited.
I know, I'm ashamed that Citroën didn't embarrass me. They clearly didn't see how many Twitter followers I've got, and clearly...
How many is it now, Jack?
2000, over 2,000 now.
Really? 2,020-something now, isn't it, Jack?
Yeah, I think we should talk about rallying again, because I don't like talking about
it. It's just all the people he follows, though, Tony.
Yeah, it's just you just follow me and I'll follow you. Yeah. Apparently, you can buy followers as well. Whether you know that? Yeah, there's certain people have bought followers, I've been led to believe, which I find fascinating, but still, there you go.
Have we gone off topic now, do you think?
We have, and I'm not talking about you, Jack Bengen. Of course you're not. Of course you haven't bought followers, Jack Bengen. Of course you know all those people overseas. Sorry, Jack Bengen, we get sidetracked. Go on, it's your hero we're talking about. He is, of course, Sebastian Loeb. He's on gravel now in this C3 World Rally Car.
Yeah, ironically, we keep talking about my hero. I seem to be the only person who doesn't actually want him to come back into the World Rally Championship, which is quite odd. Feeling to have, but he's been back testing, and it's sort of a mute point, really. Not confirming he's going to be back in the championship or sort of giving anything away, really. But good to see him getting a gravel test, and I'm sure Citroën will get a lot of feedback from him. Many people when they think of Sebastian Loeb think of asphalt, but also very, very successful on gravel as well.
Right. I don't want to cover old ground because I feel like this is one of those stories that'll keep on coming round until there is some confirmation. They're just dipping in and using Sebastian to do some testing at the moment. I don't think there's anything more than a story than that, is there?
There's two things, isn't there? And Jack just said there, Jack doesn't want to see him come back to the championship. And I know why he's saying that, and I understand that. And Sebastian Loeb at the minute is the sport's most successful driver by far. Well, not just at the minute, he will be for the foreseeable future. But he walked away at the top of his game, didn't he? He walked away when he was still winning rallies. And I'm sure he can come back and he can be very competitive. But It wouldn't be nice, would it, if he did come back and he wasn't as competitive as we all hope he will be. So at the end of the day, Citroën are using him for his experience at the minute, and I'm sure he's going to be very valuable in the development of that car. It would be great for the sport to see him do a selected program next year, but I can kind of see where Jack's coming from in that in some ways it's risking his legacy a little bit, risking his fantastic record that he's achieved over the years.
Boys, I'm going to come to you. We've got a crazy Leo Ulrich on a little bit later on, and Leo has a unique spin on things to do with rallying. Jackie is a very, very big Sebastian Loeb fan, but he made lots of points, all of which I'll just let the listeners listen to a bit later on. But he made one about Sebastian Loeb, and he used a roundy term. He used the return of Michael Schumacher to Formula One, where it perhaps engaged F1 fans to the extent where obviously he had a legacy to protect, but clearly he wanted to come back and he still had a passion to race. Do you think Sebastian Loeb could win more fans by coming back and doing it that way? I can see where Leo was going with this, but you know, could it engage others to kind of see, you know, I suppose Sebastian Loeb have that passion to still be involved in rallying?
When I was listening to Ryan talking about that there, I almost interjected and said, you mean like Michael Schumacher's return to Formula One? But I thought...
I had the same thing going through my head, but you know, we're not allowed to talk about Formula One. So.
Well, Niall Burns will love the fact that we're going to talk about Formula One, so let's talk about Formula One for a bit. Michael Schumacher came back at a point where Mercedes wasn't quite ready to be competitive in Formula One, and everyone remembered his Ferrari days where he was so dominant. He came back into an uncompetitive car, couldn't make any sort of inroads into the championship, and you know, he was pretty much matching or very, very close to his teammate at the time, Nico Rosberg, who went on to win a world championship. So neither of them bad drivers by any stretch of the imagination. Neither of them get the best out of that car. It's going to be interesting to see where the Citroën is next year. I'm sure they'll be investing heavily in their development of that car and the actual car itself. It would be good. It'd be good to see him come back and win rallies. But you know, we've talked about it at great length, and it's been years now where people have been saying that you know there's not been the chances for young drivers to come through into the championship, and you know, crying out for more manufacturers in the sport to give people that chance and for Sebastian to come and take one of those seats away. You know, for me, Craig Breen's been by far the best Citroën driver this year, and although he's not the first person to who would be on your sheet, if you like, for winning a rally, he has guaranteed that manufacturer points this season, which is, you know, every single team needs that person who's going to guarantee them a set of points.
Do you know what? Right, I'm going to interject here. Right, I think that's quite unfair, because I don't think Craig has been allowed. Perhaps I think he's been given a job to do. So I'm not entirely sure whether he's not that driver that could go out and win rallies. I think he's just done exactly what he's been told to do.
Maybe you're right, but we've not seen I've not seen a stage time from Craig Breen this year where I've thought, wow, that's good enough to win the rally. I can't remember a stage. You know, by all means, Absolute Rally listeners, put me right and tweet in. You know, there's 2,000 of you following me, so one of you's got to, one of you's got to agree with me. But I've watched Craig's career from when he was in the STs and watched Craig come through, and very, very big fan of Craig. And you know, I've spoken on this podcast many, many times about what a fantastic job I think Craig's done. And I think if you give him a full season of rallies next year, then yeah, maybe the year after he will be a candidate for a consistent rally winner. But he is going to have that taken away from him next year by the fact that, you know, he might have to, if this does happen, for example, he's going to have to share a car with Sebastian Loeb. So he's losing rallies. So he's going to lose recce's. When we go into 2019, he's going to have less of a chance on those rallies because he's not had a recce.
Well, he can still do the recce's.
All right, well, he can do the recce's, but he's not going to get the experience of the rally, is he? So think about how many notes WRC drivers change over the course of an event. If you watch them on board, you'll know they're changing many, many, many notes through a stage. So, yeah, all right, he might get the recce, but he's not going to get the experience of actually doing the event and correcting his notes. And for me, if you're not doing the full season, then you know, look at Ezepe Kalapi. Latvala's ruled him out of contention for next year's championship because he's not done events like Argentina. It's very, very important that these drivers are doing these events every year to be in contention with people like Sebastian Ogier, who are by far the best driver. And you know, he's by far the best driver in the championship for me. And if he's doing the rallies every single year, you're always going to be at a loss compared to him, aren't you? Unless you're actually doing the rallies and getting some experience.
before I bring you in, right, just we're going to go off on a tangent here. I think that's very good of Yari Matty pointing out that his teammate, his younger teammate, isn't going to be in contention. Bit of mind games, maybe?
It could be a little bit of that, but it's probably been realistic. I mean, Yari Matty, he's been on the receiving end, I think, of the mind games, as we know, but I don't know. I don't think Yari Matty's that overly political. I just think he's probably realistic. But at the same time, he probably just wants to put his junior team in his place, just for now, anyway. Just particularly after what happened in Finland.
Yeah. Now, just with regards to the point we've just been talking about, Craig, where do you side on this one? As I say, I think he's been told to do a job, and he's been told to grind results out, which is exactly what he's done, which is why he's been the best Citroen driver this year. Do you think if he was let off the leash, we would be looking at something a little bit different?
I'm not sure, honestly, because I think what he's done this year, he's driven at a level he's been comfortable at, and he's produced great results by doing that. It's obviously, once you start pushing a little bit harder, then you're taking a lot more risks and risk not finishing the rally. And I think, like you said, you know, he was there this year to gain experience, to finish the rallies, and to get results. And with the way things have been going in the team, the last thing they needed to see was a fastest time and then an accident from him. So, yeah, I think he's wanted the experience he needed to get around the rallies. Would it be nice to see those flashes of stage times? Well, yes, it would. But I just think his level of experience in that car, he's done a good job. And I think, like you said, he's in a position where he's had to play a team role as well as thinking about his future career.
Very much so. Very much so. Jack Bengen, before we. You were over on the Isle of Man. Of course, we did a pretty much programme all about the Isle of Man last week. We had Mark Higgins on, of course, the fastest man round the island, it has to be said. But it's caused a number of headaches to a number of people. First, we have to pass our congratulations to Keith Cronin. He's won the championship by a point one of a second and 1 point in the championship, of course, just pipping Frederick Arlin towards the end. But it hasn't been the cleanest finish, I think it's fair to say, to the championship, has it?
You put me on the spot to try and get me to explain this, because you said you've done one podcast in the preview to this, but you could do four in the post event. To be honest, it's such a minefield of what actually happened on the event and the things that went on. But yeah, like you said, it's difficult to kind of work out who was going to be the champion at the end. We had a terrible accident for Jamie Dukes where he went off on the marine drive stage and rolled down a cliff face. Luckily didn't go into the ocean or anything like that, so that was great. He's in hospital with a broken neck, so that was playing on everyone's mind at the point of before the start of the last stage. And we also had a time query in for Keith Cronin's time earlier in the day for a stage where he caught a car in a merge, which, by the way, here's another debate for the podcast: do merges and splits belong in an international rally? My stance on that is no, by the way. But Keith got caught behind Hugh Hunter and lost a bit of time there. Wanted some time back. Obviously, there's not really anything in a regulation that says if you get caught at a split, you get this X amount of time back. So that was a bit difficult. So going into the start of that stage, we didn't know whether Keith was going to get time back. So we didn't know how far behind Matt Edwards he actually was on that leg. So we didn't know how much time he needed to take back. So it was all incredibly complicated, and although I think the Manx roads are some of the best tarmac roads in the world and by far one of my favourite events to go to, I think the organisation was lacking this year and they need to put together a better event for next year.
Before we go any further with this, right, mergers and splits, I'm going to come to you, right, and the reason why I'm going to come to you is I did the rally last year and the format was very similar in the sense of we did loops of stages, which is very, very popular, I think, in Belgium, using these kind of sectors almost, I think it is, because you use a lot of industrial estates and things like that, I think, on some of the rallies. So these kind of splits and merges on these kind of sectors is quite popular. But are we now in a situation where we don't have access to all the roads that we perhaps once had, and we haven't got all the marshals we had, so we have to make good with what we've got? Does that make sense?
I think you've probably hit the nail on the head in this instance. It's a lot of it's down to marshals, isn't it? And if you use the same piece of road again, obviously your marshals are already there. you've got to be clever how you run them. I mean, obviously, what Jack's alluding to there, you know, on an international rally, you don't want to be in a situation where you're seeing cars get held up and having to try and alter people's stage times, and you know that becomes very, very difficult. They don't just run it on industrial estates in Belgium. You know, I've done like proper stages, if you like, sections of stages on a few occasions where they run like a looping system. But you know, they're very proactive in how they run it. You know, I remember, for example, one particular loop section, the stage start was maybe only like 20 meters from the corner that you're actually looping round, and they'd actually have a marshal on the first corner, and if there was a car coming, they wouldn't send another one in, so they would actually amend your stage start time then. And to my knowledge, you know, they don't do that. They'll just send you in on your minute regardless. So in Belgium, they're quite astute at how they run this looping system. It can work if you really, you know, if it really has to, but it's you know, and obviously Jack's written an interesting column in MN this week about it. And, you know, the Isle of Man has some of the best stages in the world, second to none. You know, some of the best tarmac roads, fantastic challenge, very fast, as we talked about. And then you turn onto the smaller roads, incredible stages. And in years gone by, you know, my motor club used to send there was a big group of marshals went over every year, that it was a yearly trip, and then I think they moved on to the Tour of Mull, but that's gone now. You know, there isn't the big groups of marshals there used to be, and it is a shame to see the rally surrounded in controversy for a second year in the row, because it, you know, it always was really the highlight of the British Championship. The Championship always finished in the Isle of Man. It was always the biggest, longest, toughest round of the Championship, and it's been won by many of the biggest names of the sport. And I think if the rally was lost from the Championship, it would be a real shame, but it isn't the first time, and obviously things can't continue as they are.
I like, by the way, Jack, in your particular column that you've wrote about this, and it is an excellent piece, it has to be said, that you've managed to get in the fact that it was a sunroof manufacturer that used to sponsor it. I wonder how you learned that.
Well, I was reminded on last week's Absolute Rally, wasn't I?
He was, but didn't you want to do an amendment to what you said as we wrapped up that particular section with regards to...
He didn't have Bastos on the side of the car. It was,
he didn't.
There was an interesting thing that went on with the cigarette company, wasn't there? And they weren't allowed to advertise cigarettes on the car, so he took the sticker off.
There you go. It's all right. Listen, Jack, you were there. You were the man on the ground. What was the general feeling from... I've spoke to a couple of people who did the rally. It would be unfair of me to name them. To say disillusioned doesn't quite cover it, but I don't think it's fair. I think there's got to be some responsibility all around here. You were there. You were in the eye of the storm, as it were. What was your feelings on it?
It's difficult because the piece I've written in MN this week, not the column, the actual news story is centred a lot around Martin Wilkerson and Frederick Arlene, who are obviously both part of the same team, both fighting for a championship on the event. You know, they were the ones who came away without winning the championship, and you know, some people have said, oh, you know, it looks a bit like sour grapes, but they were the people who had the strongest views, and they were the people I had to pick out. You know, if I had 10 pages, I honestly could have written 10 pages about, you know, just with quotes alone about people who were upset about how the event had run. I was very, very, very sad to see that a lot of the, you know, the guys further down were blaming the British Rally Championship guys for some of the stuff that was going on, when in actual fact, you know, if you were actually there at the front of the field seeing what was going on, you know, the BRC lot weren't doing, like, for example, let's take stage 17, for instance. If you've read MN this week, you'll know that the stop crew who were at special stage 15 moved the stop line up to a junction, and that was a junction onto a main road, so that clearly wasn't safe. So the safety delegate came through and said, no, that's not safe, you need to move the stop line back to where it was originally, which was probably 200 yards down a really narrow road. And they said, no, we don't think that's safe, we don't want to stand here and do our job in that environment, so we're going to leave. So that stop line crew left, and then one of the gents who was going around in the safety car had to actually get out and run the stop line. So while all this was going on, this is why the BRC guys were saying, this is not safe. You know, this is the X amount of times we've started a stage, you know, an hour or so late today, and our cars are, you know, we've got diffs to worry about, we've got engines to worry about, and it's not, you know, it's not 50 quid if our engines go. You know, we're talking about guys who've spent, you know, for a start, sort of 15,000 to 25,000 pounds or whatever on getting to the event and doing the event itself. But also, we've got a championship on the line where these guys have spent that amount of money on every single round this year, and that's all coming down to, you know, them arguing at this at this one stage. It's not just the fact that they have to go in with the cars cold. You know, I've seen some really pathetic comments on Facebook and Twitter, you know, calling the BRC drivers all sorts of names because they weren't driving to the stage cold. That wasn't their issue. Their issue was that it had been happening all day. Repeatedly, they had to go into stages with freezing cold cars that were, you know, it's damaging the vehicles that they're using. I don't think people have a, you know, mechanical understanding of the R5 car, of how, you know, how you do need to get things warmed up for it to be, you know, not just safe, but also, you know, for you to be able to use it consistently without breaking things. And we saw Fred De Carlin with a broken diff over the event. Whether that was related to, you know, how many times you started the stage freezing cold, you know, we'll never know because you can't really measure that. But, you know, I found the reaction from some of the crews further back in that event to be really sort of really poor and negative. And you'd never see, you know, for example, a British Touring Car Championship driver criticising a, you know, mini challenge event because someone had, you know, had a crash and left some bodywork on the track or something like that. I just think in the state that rallying's in, you know, we need unity in championships. We need people to come together and actually, you know, work on making events stronger, making the sport stronger. And when you get, you know, you got five people at the front who are actually A, fighting for what they think is safety, and B, trying to improve the organisation of the event by what they're doing, and then you've got 50 people behind who are saying, oh, these BRC lads have turned up and they're, you know, they're making our event take longer. And I, you know, I think it's really sad. I think, you know, rallying really needs to take a look at this incident as a cross section and learn from it. Sorry, that was a bit of a monologue.
No, absolutely. Rai, what's your take on this?
Well, I wasn't at the event like Jack, and obviously Jack's got the inside knowledge on it. And, you know, if you're starting, as we talked about earlier on, Tony, you know, sometimes you do have to start a stage cold. Sometimes you're driving straight out of Parc Fermé into the stage. Sometimes there's an accident, there's a delay. And, you know, from a point of having cold tyres and all that kind of thing, you've just got to deal with that and get on with it, because it will happen on every rally. But, you know, like I agree that running a car from stone cold and doing it often, obviously, isn't ideal. Certainly transmission wise, the cars don't really like it. But like I said, you know, there is a lot of rallies around the country that's what people do, isn't it? You know, a lot of single venue rallies that people do, for example. But as I said before, I think it's just it's a sad state of affairs when we're having not just us, but when there's a public debate, such a criticising public debate about a British Championship round again. You know, we saw it last year with the Manx. We saw it last year, unfortunately, with the Pirelli rally. And we don't have many entries on our international series now, our British Championship series. And, you know, we need to see professional events that are up to that standard that keep those competitors there. Having said that, we all know that the organisers of these events are unpaid largely. And, you know, in the past, some of them used to be paid because the events had big sponsors. We had car manufacturers putting money in. And some of the organisers could take a salary out of it, whereas most of them now do it out of the love of the sport. They're doing it after they finish their day jobs. They're hoping that marshals will turn up, and then they don't. You know, it's a difficult position because you've got competitors paying a lot of money to be there, drivers particularly, and that's the thing now. Most people get paid in a rally team, and it's the driver paying for it one way or another. So it's awfully expensive for the competitors to be there. They're paying a huge entry fee to do the rally, but obviously very little of that really goes towards the profit of the rally. And organisers are effectively, you know, organising these events on minimal funds with not enough people to do it.
Absolutely. If you want me to tell you, boys, what I find quite sad, and I know I drive, if you pardon the pun, the programme, it sucks that we started with this particular part and we've done maybe 10 minutes on this and we still haven't mentioned that we've now got a 4-time British Rally Champion, which we all spoke about throughout the season. We're surprised that, in our opinion, at times he was struggling, and now he's just being crowned a British Rally Champion. And we had someone like Matt Edwards put in the performance that he put on, you know, largely unfancied tyres, it has to be said, on the Hankooks, but they've been proved to be such good rubber for him throughout the year. But we've done 10 to nearly 15 minutes on why perhaps the Manx didn't quite work and, you know, controversy around the championship. I find that really sad, Jack.
That's why this is so disappointing, though, because, you know, this is the anniversary of what most people find to be, you know, the most famous and closest championship fight we've ever had in the British Rally Championship in 1997. You know, five people going in with a chance of winning the championship, and you look at the points and how that played out. This was actually a lot closer in terms of, you know, obviously there was less people, but the actual championship fight came down to 0.1 seconds at the end of the rally. And it came down to 1 point in the championship. It literally doesn't get any closer than that. I can't stress how important that is. And also, we've got a four-time British champion now who's tied with Roger Clark. He's done it in four different cars, and he's done it with four different co-drivers. Now, if you can go to any championship in the world that is at the level of BRC and show me someone who's, you know, been that versatile in terms of winning championships, then, you know, I'm quite happy to hear who they are and learn a bit more about them. What a fantastic performance by Keith Cronin under horrific pressure all weekend. I think people are forgetting this. It's not just the case that, you know, the event, there was problems with the event being run, but he's got Frederick Arlin, who's been very competitive at WRC2 level, never mind been very successful in the British Rally Championship this season, and Matt Edwards, who's been a relative unknown, but is actually, he's another one of the lost stories of this event, which would have been told in much more depth had this not all happened. You know, how far he's come. He's fighting directly with Keith Cronin. He's been driving cars on asphalt for so many years now, and Matt debuted on the Ulster in his R5 last year and not done so much on tarmac in four-wheel drive cars. Same for Frederick, that was his fifth tarmac event in a four-wheel drive car, and those performances, the three of them were all incredible, and that's all been lost because of the, you know, some of the things that have happened in this event.
Well, there you go.
Should I tell you why I don't need to talk about Keith Cronin winning the British Championship?
Go on.
Well, I think I said that 9 months ago.
I think you did call him as the championship winner, didn't you? Fair play.
But I think we all, throughout the season, have kind of been left scratching our heads wondering where Keith was.
Yeah, because he did the job and he won the championship, as Jack's just said. And, you know, ultimately, incredible record now on the British Championship in such a cross-section of cars. But yeah, we probably didn't see the fierce speed from Keith Cronin this year that we've seen other years. You know, other years he just had this uncanny knack of finding incredible speed and setting incredible stage times, you know, against the likes of Mark when Mark Higgins was still in the British Championship. And we probably didn't see that from Keith this year. Now, whether he just still hasn't quite gelled with that car or for whatever reason, I don't think we saw the same explosive speed from him. Nonetheless, he won the championship, so congratulations to him on that.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Click motorsportauctions.com. Now, one of the world's leading motorsport online classified adverts and auction sites. It's easy to use, providing listing platforms that enable you to sell race and rally cars, surplus parts, transporters, clothing, workshop and pit equipment. We specialise in cataloguing, listing and selling large quantities of motorsport related surplus and obsolete stock. Click motorsportauctions.com. This is Absolute Rally.
Jack, one thing we need to cover as well, of course, is the juniors. The junior was crowned Callum Devine versus William Crichton. It was dubbed by you, and it was the Opel versus the 208. Just tell our listeners a little bit about the drivers and, of course, what was the winning R2?
Well, first of all, two of the most likeable lads I've ever met in my, you know, in my career in journalism so far. Anyway, both really great to talk to, always positive, always happy to see you at the stop lines, and, you know, really nice to have two lads like that in the championship to cover. It's been an absolute joy this year. But Callum Devine in the Opel Adam R2 came out on top in the end. William Crichton had his first, probably, you know, his first bad event of the year, I'd say. You know, he ended up in a ditch on the first leg, which was, you know, a bit of a shame, but he knew he had to win one of the legs, and he pushed hard to try and do that. And, you know, unfortunately, these things are going to happen, as you both know. In the second leg, William had to push on again and again had to try and win. But he had a puncture in the stage 15 that we talked about earlier. So he was really let down by a puncture and by his off in the first leg. So that was a real shame. But I don't think he can take anything bad away from this year. I don't think anyone would have picked him out as a championship contender at the start of the year. William, I'm sure, I know William won't mind me saying that, but what a fantastic year he's had, and really, you know, he's been the favourite for most of the year, really, when you look at things. And Callum, not so competitive in the Fiesta at the start of the year, the R2T, but as soon as he switched to the Opel, he's won every single event he's done the Opel, apart from one, which was the Ulster, which an alternator failure took him out of the lead. So, you know, if you look at things like that, chances are he may have won that other event as well. So he's been completely dominant since switching to the Adam, and you know, he's been equal to the car in terms of performance as well.
Absolutely, absolutely, well done. And I'd be interested to see what Callum ends up doing now as well, whether he does go down that particular Junior World Championship route or whether he goes ERC. Whatever he does, obviously we'll get him on and we'll have a catch up with him. Boys, we kind of got to that section of the programme. We're not quite any other business yet. I just wanted to throw something out there, and we're massive fans of what M Sport do, and you know, they just so much that they put into the sport. I just wouldn't mind your take on this. I'll come to you first, Jack. The fact that M Sport have won the new BRC in its last 2 years, do you think that potentially could put off some of the smaller teams coming to try and fight with them, or does it act as the hare to be chased, as it were?
It's difficult, that one. I think last year it was supposedly a DMAT team, wasn't it? With, you know, it definitely wasn't the hordes of M Sport people. It was, you know, it was Autotech running the car. So I think last year may be a little bit different, but this year has been effectively a works assault from M Sport. Not quite in the, from a personal point of view, and covering the championship this year, I don't think it's been quite as extensive as people might think. You know, you see M Sport kind of livery on the car, and you see the M Sport guys walking around with logos on the t-shirts and stuff, and you think, wow, this is a WRC effort. But in actual fact, a lot of the events they've not tested for, they've just gone straight into the event, or they've just done the short shakedown before the stage. So it's not like they've thrown the kitchen sink in terms of money at this. And I think in doing that, they've proven that, you know, it's a car capable of winning the championship, the Fiesta. It was definitely the best car to have on the Manx with the, you know, for those of you who haven't looked at the route this year, it was a lot narrower and a lot twistier than your average Manx, to be honest. And, you know, the Fiesta has been notorious for being good in your kind of short and twisty stuff, whereas the Skoda is usually better on the, you know, the kind of medium speed and quicker speed corners and that sort of stuff. So they've proven that the car's good enough. They've gone out and found a driver who they believe was good enough at the start of the year, and although he didn't quite deliver on the gravel as some of them, maybe some people hoped he would, you know, he's adapted to another new car, and this is where his, you know, his versatility comes into the question again. You know, how many different cars he's driven. He was in a Citroen DS3 last year. So bit of to and fro there, but to answer your question, no, I don't think it'll put anyone off. I think these are all customer cars at the end of the day, aren't they? You know, as much as that is an M Sport team running the car, you know, I still believe, you know, keeps bringing something to the table there, and I don't think it's going to sort of push anyone away.
Right. You in agreement?
Yeah, absolutely. If anything, it gives you something to aim at, doesn't it? I mean, the one thing about the R5 formula is, in theory, all the cars are equal, and obviously the M Sport cars will have the latest updates and will always be the latest spec. They probably have a better, maybe a better understanding of geometries and things like that. But you know, ultimately, any professional team should be able to take one of these cars and run it at a similar level. So I think it's a good yardstick. I mean, we don't have works teams in the British Championship anymore. You know what I mean by that is manufacturer funded teams, but we'd all love to see it again. And if, you know, if we suddenly had two works teams in the British Championship next year, would we complain about that? Well, I don't think so, because that's what we want to see there. So, you know, it's good for the championship having the likes of M Sport there, and if anything, as we know, the championship still lacks this strength in depth, and that's what we'd love to see. We'd love to see, you know, 10 cars fighting at the front, and as much as we've seen the year start off quite well, then obviously, you know, we were down to just a few players at the end of it, and that's what it would be nice to see, is that strength in depth. But I think the likes of an M Sport being there is a good thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're going to move away now from. I'll tell you one thing. I'm just going to mention, by the way, congratulations to brother Keith, who went out. Keith Cronin won the obviously the British Rally Championship, which he's been talking about, but brother Daniel went out and won a rally the following day in an R5 Fiesta back home in Ireland as well. Fair play. Obviously they're gonna whether we see Daniel out in the BRC next year, I really, really don't know. But congratulations to the Cronins across the board. But Jack, we're going to come to ERC now. We were hoping that we would have Chris Ingram on, who's still leading, who was leading the under 27s going into the event. Your friend and hero, Brian Bouffier, won the event. Not another close one, Jack. 0.3 of a second he took it from Kaito.
Yeah, it was a really close battle and very interesting to see as well. Brian trailing Kaitan Kaitanovic going into the last stage and managed, like you say, overcoming by 0.3 seconds. So it's been a bit of a weekend of close rallies, which is really good to see. I think the event looked spectacular from the pictures and, you know, we saw some pictures of the Coliseum and the cars going past and that sort of thing. I think they had a few problems organisationally considering the event previously had been a national event and maybe not quite ready for that step up to an ERC standard event. I'm not sure they were quite ready for it, but great performance by Brian once again.
Absolutely. Kaito still leads the championship from Bruno Magalhães. I think there's two more events left to go on that one, Jack?
Just the one lap, this year.
It's just Latvia, of course. With regards to juniors, where are we at with now? Of course, we were hoping to talk to Chris Ingram. Where are we at where Chris has in his championship?
Well, Philip Mahrez won the junior section of the event over the weekend. I don't think it was a great event for Chris. Be interesting to hear his thoughts and listen to him on his thoughts over the event over the weekend. New co-driver, which is always difficult. He had Ross Whittick in for him. I know from experience, as a very talented young lad, so I'm sure they'll get on well together. But yeah, he's leading championship going into the final round, and he's got Jari Huttunen and Philip Mahrez breathing down his neck. So it's going to be a very difficult event for Chris. But from a British point of view, I'm sure there'll be a lot of people out there backing him and hoping he can push this across the line and get himself €100,000 towards an R5 drive next year.
Absolutely. 2 points off Mahrez now in the championship. So all to play for going into the final round. Boys, we're at the any other business section. I've got two little bits that I wouldn't mind doing, but as ever, minor compared to yours and yours, Ryan Champion and Jack Bengen. Jack Bengen, would you like to go first or second?
I'll go second.
Okay, Ryan Champion, over to you.
Well, I've got three bits. Would you like them? Would you like them all in? Well, we haven't got anything to talk about next week, so one's going to carry. One can be thought about for the next week or so. Do you want me to do all three at once, or would you like me to split them?
You knock yourself out. Go on, let's get them off your chest.
The first one is a quick one that we will tweet out on the Absolute Rally Twitter feed later on. I think it was Red Bull Spain have just produced this video of Carlos Sainz Senior and Carlos Sainz Junior taking each other on head to head on gravel in buggies, like RX buggies. Epic little battle between them racing on gravel. Looked like a whole heap of fun, that did. So good little video. Watch that. It would be great to see Carlos Junior in a rally car, wouldn't it, in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And he has had a skid in a 911, by the way.
Yeah, I know that. So with you, probably. With you.
He did a bit of ice driving before he went to Formula One.
Are you trying to claim some kind of credibility in coaching and things like that? Surely not.
In fairness, Martin Rowe did the majority of that. So the credit for Carlos Sainz's fourth place in the Singapore Grand Prix goes to Martin Rowe.
There you go. Well done, Martin. Go on. What's your next bit?
So we were talking about Gardemeister going into the World Championship at 17, starting World Championship rallies. It's happened before, as we talked about.
Who going into it? Whoa, pause. Who's going into the championship at 17?
Sorry. I'll start again, shall I?
Jack Bengen, let's just take a moment to appreciate this. If I had a hallelujah noise, I'd play it now.
He Gardemeister-driven car. It was Gardemeister car. That was the thing I was thinking of.
So go on, right.
Pera going into WRC events at 17. And it took me sort of back a few years to still a relatively young man who it came to me on I saw a tweet this week that Yevgeny Novikov was 27 years old this week. I thought, is he only 27? Because it seems like ages ago he joined the World Rally Championship. So I did a little bit of looking back at his career, because it feels like a long time ago, doesn't it, now?
Yeah, I remember the C4, that image of the C4.
Yes.
Yeah.
Obviously the one that lives with everybody, that moment in Finland where he managed to nearly stand it on its back bumper. I think he did actually land it on its back bumper. But he made his debut in 2007 on Rally GB as a 17-year-old, having already driven for a couple of years in Russia and maybe Estonia as well. But yeah, he literally made his world championship debut when he was 17. He was in the C4 when he was 18. You know, so a proper full hit piece of kit that was at the time as well. And as we remember, he was quite explosive in that. That C4. He went away from the World Championship for a year and then came back, and I think it was 3 years on the bounce he did. Now, you might remember this. I'll come to you, Tony, first. What was Novikov's best result in the World Championship, would you say?
I think it was a fifth.
Jack Bennion?
I think he had a fourth.
And this actually surprised me that he had two second places in WIS.
Wow. Where were they? Educators,
oh,
Ryan,
on,
tell us.
On. Oh, no, I think it's gone again.
Yeah,
sorry.
Thanks,
go on,
thanks,
go on,
yeah.
Go on.
The first one was Rally Portugal in an M Sport Fiesta.
Okay.
And the second one was in Sardinia. But he also had several fourth place finishes, several fifth place finishes. And it's funny, isn't it? You know, like a driver like that, he hasn't been in the WRC since 13, but you probably don't remember actually that he did as well as he has. He came to the championship and, you know, was there for a few years, getting good results, and then disappeared again completely, and still only 27 years old.
I wouldn't like to work out how much they spent, though.
A little bit. A few.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. Okay. One more from you?
Yes. So this is my one to leave with everybody for the week. And we want some Twitter pictures. So Jack Bennion is my inspiration for this one.
Ewa?
Oh, God.
It's not my inspiration for many things, but, I mean, hairstyling, obviously. But also for my final any of the business of the week, and it's, what is your favourite non-tobacco livery?
Wow.
I want pictures. So we talked about the Bastos non-Bastos M3 from the Isle of Man. There's quite a famous blue and yellow colour scheme that was a non-tobacco one, but I'll give you mine, and it's quite an unusual one. Mine came from Per Eklund. And at the time, he was sponsored by Camel, and he had the beautiful yellow Lancia, I think it was, the one I'm particularly thinking of. And his way of getting around the tobacco ban was, it said on the side of the car, came first. But actually, if you stood back, it looked like Camel. And it said, came first, in brackets, Swedish Hill Climb Championship.
Okay, I like it. All right.
So I'll throw it to you two, and then we'll throw it up to Twitter.
Okay. Well, I'll need to have a little bit of a think about that one.
I can go now if you want.
Yeah, go on.
I really liked. Well, as long as you keep this a secret, I'll tell you this now. I was a bit of a Ferrari Formula One fan when I was a bit younger, and I really liked the Marlboro non Marlboro livery on the 206 WRC, because the 206 WRC is one of my favourite looking WRC cars. I think Burnsy drove a Marlboro liveried one, didn't he, at some point? That's one of my favourites, especially in the modern era. Anyway.
He had a year of Nicorette personal sponsorship and then moved to a Marlboro sponsored.
Oh, the dilemma. Yeah. I'm going to struggle, to be honest with you, off the top of my head.
I'll give you a good one you could go with, and it was the Kronos Citroën. You remember that one?
Yeah, the was that the Go Fast one?
Well, yeah, that was it. It had Go, didn't it? And exclamation marks on the side. The Gitans, is it a beautiful blue colour scheme? And then it just had like, yeah, Go and Go Fast and whatever the Go Fast was. That not an energy drink actually on it?
I think it was. Yeah, it was.
They ran Go on the side of the car, just Go and then exclamation marks, I think. But tweet us in some pictures.
I think I quite like that one. Jack Bennion, are you ready to go with yours?
Yeah, I also had three bits, believe it or not. But you've taken a sword to mine, to one of mine, because I was going to congratulate Daniel Cronin for his victory over on the Clare Stages Rally. As you rightfully pointed out, Keith winning on Saturday and Daniel winning on Sunday. Only his second event in the R5, by the way. Pretty impressive win. And he's also doing the Cork 20 rally later in the year, which is the final round of the Irish Tarmac Championship. So good to see that. My second one is that I'm very excited to see that Jimmy McRae is going to do the course car on the McRae Gravel Challenge, which I discussed a couple of months ago on Absolute Rally. So that's this weekend on Saturday. There's an event in Craigvinian Forest, which is one of Colin McRae's favourite forests. And they're running Colt Ness Car Club, which Colin was a member of, are running a special event to commemorate him. No plan to run this year. It's just a one-off. David Bogie's going to be out in his Skoda Fabia R5, and Jimmy McRae is going to drive his Vauxhall Firenza, the V8 thing that's most famously known for going sideways through Sweet Lamb on the national element of Wales Rally GB, I'd say, in that fantastic Castrol livery, like a beige colour scheme. So very nice to see that, and I'm very much looking forward to some very nice pictures from that. Also good to see that the Forestry Commission have made some spectator areas for the guys who are going to go and watch that as well. So if you're close to Scotland, or even if you're not, you should probably go and watch that, because it's going to be fantastic to see. And finally, as much as many negatives there's been about the Rally Isle of Man this week, I just wanted to add two further things. First of all, I still think that the roads are absolutely some of the best in the world, and for an event to have event like roads like that at its disposal is fantastic. And I did go and take some very sad pictures at Vatnin's Grid
we've seen that with Ben.
And you know, things like that, like that road, the Faulty Wheel stage, it's just even to drive that in a road car is a bit of an honour. And then you think these guys are going 10 temps in rally cars, it's absolutely spectacular. And the other thing is, just wanted to say from a personal point of view, obviously a lot of negativity has gone out about the Isle of Man, and unfortunately it's not always my case to it's not always my decision to decide whether things are positive or negative. It's my job to report the news and to remain unbiased, unless it's in my column or something like that. But I wanted to say a personal sort of well done and thank you to all the marshals that did actually go over to the Isle of Man, and many of them who I did bump into at stop lines, not from the Isle of Man, were still from over in various parts of the UK and Ireland. A lot of them did a fantastic job. All of them stood out in varying conditions, from cold to wet, dark, the usual kind of spread of rallying conditions. And I think every single one of them has, it's very easy for me and some of the guys at the front, and even some of the guys at the back, to criticise some of the conditions that happened on the event. But it's also very easy to forget that these guys are, organising this rally year round for no money. It's completely voluntary. It's really sad when things like this happen, where you do have to release some sort of negative press towards the event. But hopefully there is a bit of a gold at the bottom of the rainbow moment for the organisers, where they see some of these things that are being pointed out that haven't quite gone so well, and it does encourage them to think about what they're doing next year for the event, and the format can maybe be adapted a little bit, and we do see the BRC going back, because some quite strong comments from Ben Taylor in MN this week. If you've not read the story, it sounds like the BRC are looking elsewhere for rounds for next year's championship. So that. Go on.
I was just going to say, everyone's going to have an opinion on this, but I'm going to, it's very, very easy to kind of maybe, as I say, have a go at the events and stuff like that. I think everybody has to take some responsibility. And I think that includes the championship as well. There was 13 cars that were there from the BRC. If that would have happened under the previous management, I think there would have been outroar about that. So I think everybody has to look from within as well of how they make the championship stronger, not just put the onus on the events, Jack, to be honest with you.
I think that's the thing moving forward, but the BRC have got no sort of operational control about decisions that are being made on the event. So from a more general point of view, yeah, I definitely agree that the championship's got a lot of work to do next year to actually attract some crews back and to take more people to the Isle of Man and to all the other events, if they are on the calendar. But for me, there needs to be a serious look at the format of the event, because this is 2 years in a row that this has happened now, and we've had the same problems happening for 2 years in a row. So there needs to be a real look at how the event is formatted. And if you look at the Ulster, for example, let's just take the Ulster.
As the owner, any other business goes, you've actually done now 10 minutes. But go on.
It wasn't 10 minutes. It's not.
Honestly, I'm doing the countdown for the edit.
Okay. I'm going to record it.
Okay, go on.
So finally. The Ulster runs 27 more miles than the Isle of Man, and it takes an extra day to do it. And the Ulster managers to do all their stuff in Friday and Saturday. The shakedown for Isle of Man was on Wednesday, which for me is way too soon for both crews at the front and crews at the back, because a lot of them are self-employed or they're all funding their own rallying, and to have an extra day off work is a bit silly for me for not very much gain. Could have done the shakedown on Thursday morning. They can look at moving the stages close together. They can take the merges out and just run the stages as they are. You've got so many good roads out there that they don't need to do gimmicky things like running loops and stuff. They can just run the stage as it is, and it just causes extra problems. So I think they just need to look at the format and really, really do what they can with what they've got. They're trying to organise the best manx they can, which is fine, but do it within what you've got at your disposal in terms of resources.
Ryan, are you still with us?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I was just supposed to make sure you were still with us. Yeah, welcome back.
Thanks.
Jack, breathe now, please. Breathe.
You know what? If this something like this happens next year, I'm just gonna say like one sentence as an answer for you, and then we'll see how good the coverage from the BRC is then.
No, not at all, Jack. You get it off your chest. I can tell. I'm just conscious of time, and I've got
2,000 followers now. I've got power. Do you understand how this works? You're going to have to go through my steeple soon, Tony.
Do you remember what I said about the power of unfollow? Anyway. Right, what was I going to say? Right, we've had a couple of bits and pieces in, guys, which I really, really want to make reference to. Sam Walker dropped us a message. There's going to be Elvin's Corner this year in Meherrin on Rally GB. People are already starting to get behind it. Obviously, we had Irish Corner the other year and things like that. And Sam Walker dropped us a very nice message from listening to the podcast, wanted us to mention it. Obviously, we're going to be back before Rally GB, but I just want to acknowledge the fact, yes, we are more than aware that Elvin's Corner is going to be there. And we had a fantastic message from Andrew Burke. Now, Ryan Champion may recognise this name. Just want to say, great podcast. I have a little bit of news you guys may be interested in. The Galway International next year, the first round of the Irish Tarmac Championship, is returning to Comara after more than 20 years. The whole thing will be different from the plan to run Friday and Saturday and at least one night stage. The whole town will be turned into a rally village. I thought it'd be worth a mention. Early days. Also, if you can tell Ryan, I said hello. He may not remember me, but I used to do quite a bit of work a few years ago with Clive Taylor in Harper preparation, putting his Puma back together.
That had to be done a few times, in fairness.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's why I thought, we've got to do this one, because
occasionally it wasn't my fault.
I just like the fact that the way he put the comments, I had to put his Puma back together. I think the back together bit was the most important thing there. But I just wanted to say, we do read everything that comes in. We get some great emails as well, by the way. And sometimes it's just really difficult to kind of find a way of reading out full emails and things like that. But
because I talk for so long, that's why. If I just shut up every now and again, you might be able to read all the emails out.
Well, I wasn't going to say that, Jack Banion, but let me read this one to you now, because this one will be retrospective now. This is from Brian Fenton, who emailed this at 14:54 on Saturday. The last stage on the Manx is about to run. Just one thing for the moment. Why, oh why, would they try to put a silly loop into a stage thing again? They got stung last year. It's insert explicit frustration or explicit here. Let's see what comes out of it anyway. Brian, I think we've more than discussed that, and I think Jack Banion is more than discussed that all by himself. We were just a passenger, Ryan and I, during that last bit.
I'll include you both. Can you remember what happened on the loop last year?
Yes.
Did it involve a course car?
It did.
Yeah, and Mark Higgins caught it.
Correct.
Yeah. I think Mark made some references to that last week when he was on the programme.
I'm not surprised. I think he made quite a few references in the car.
Yes, he did. He did. Boys, we're at the end of, believe it or not, we're at the end of the first section of the podcast, and we've done 57 minutes. And we've still got four other sections that have already been recorded. We've got stuff coming about Rally Day. We've got Crazy Leo coming up. We've got Simon from Pace Notes Magazine, who is setting a question with regards to Keith Cronin's championship win, where you can win a year's subscription as well to Pace Notes. So there you go. So that's what you've got to look forward to, folks. We are going to have 2 weeks off now. Ryan Champion will be at Rally Day. Of course, we've got Tom Davis coming up from Rally Day, telling us all about that a little bit later on. Jack Banion, you're going to be at Rally Day?
Yeah, I'm going to make an appearance.
Good. Are you going to go and hang out with Ryan Champion in his tight Subaru suit?
I can't think of anything I'd rather do than go and spend a Saturday stood with Ryan Champion while he drives around in his Subaru Impreza.
I quite like to be there, but obviously I can't be there because Simpson Jr. is almost upon us, but I will be watching from afar. So there you go.
We'll send you some pictures.
That would be great. Folks, if you do see Ryan and Jack together, if you could get selfies with them, because pretty soon Jack will be charging for them, I've been led to believe. So now is the time to get them before
what do you
he
mean
starts charging.
Soon?
Oh, right. Sorry, I didn't realize the budget had changed. There you go. There you go. Folks, sit back, relax, enjoy the rest of the podcast. Boys, we'll be back in 2 weeks. Oh, you'll be back with me in 2 weeks, won't you, both of you?
We will.
Absolutely.
There you go. Folks, we're going to go to a little break, and then we're going to be back with Tom Davis from Rally Day, which is happening this coming weekend.
This is Absolute Rally. Case Notes Rally Magazine. Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good newsagents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Case Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally, and a little bit of a thing, which obviously Ryan Champion is going to be there because it's got the term X-Works in it. We play the X-Works bingo game all the time, but it's probably the biggest event of the year, and it's Rally Day, and we're very, very privileged to manage to grab somebody from Rally Day today, the man who seems to be pulling all the strings there at the moment. So we appreciate the time you can give us. Tom Davis, welcome to Absolute Rally.
Hello, thank you for having me on.
No worries at all. Well, obviously, we know Ryan's going to be there with the Subaru. We know there's lots going on there. The guys at MN have, of course, done a bit of a page on it as well this week. But perhaps if you can tell our listeners, we've got listeners all over the world, just what's going on at Rally Day?
I don't know where to start. That's the problem. every minute of every day, I've been having phone calls and emails from something new being added. So yesterday, I was pleased to get a phone call from M Sport, and they've been absolutely fantastic. The guys up there, Andrew Wheatley, it's been brilliant, and basically rang me to say that Keith Cronin was coming. So what a brilliant thing to be doing for the event. As you know, he won the British Rally Championship last weekend.
Yeah, which is so perfect, of course, in an M Sport car.
So exactly. So absolutely fantastic. He's taking time out of his hugely busy schedule now, as you can imagine, and he's going to be with us. So that was great. The news went out last night and this morning, actually, that he's coming. So that's hot off the press. And then obviously we move on through to literally everything else that's been happening. Rallycross Superstar Bakkerud is coming as well, Andreas Bakkerud, so that's absolutely fantastic. And that's just been released this week as well. but then, of course, the icing on the cake that we're all dying to see, and this is a complete first. It's not been publicly run in the UK. Of course, that's the 2017 Fiesta WRC car.
Yeah, and I think that's something we're all excited to see, Tom. I mean, obviously, we're getting pretty close to Rally GB now, but that's quite a coup for you, really, to have the first official debut of a 2017 World Rally car.
It is absolutely, and also the thing is yes, don't get me wrong, when we see it in Wales, it'll be competitive and it'll be going, you know, some lick through the forests and what have you. But here, you're going to be able to breathe on it. You're going to be able to get up very close to it. And the environment on the track here is very different than the noise. And I think, yeah, we were absolutely blown away when they said they'd bring it. We've been talking to them for 9 months about this. And obviously, I don't need to tell you guys with the way calendars are and the movement of these, and the cost to run these cars, I mean, it's just a phenomenal amount of cost. So for them to do this for us and for the fans is the biggest thing. It is amazing.
Now, like you said, you've got Andreas Bakkerud coming as well. Tipping your hat to Rallycross there. We always have this debate, Tony, on here, don't we? We're a rally show, but we like Rallycross. We've both been involved a little bit with Rallycross. We've had Andreas on as a guest on the show. Are we going to start to see a little bit more Rallycross in Rally Day and years going forward because of its popularity?
Do you know what? It's always welcomed. It always has been welcomed. One of the biggest issues we have is the British Rallycross is running this weekend. I don't want to plug them too much, but they're running this weekend. So it's a date clash mainly, which is a real shame. Obviously, with the international stuff we love, we're very lucky to be sponsored by Cooper Tyres, and they sponsor the World Rallycross. So there is an involvement there. But like all these things, dates just don't help. But yeah, they're always welcome. We love seeing the cars. Last year, like I said, we had quite a few of the cars here from some of the BTRDA championships, and they're phenomenal, brilliant machinery. So hopefully, I think it's, if you're a petrol head, it's a natural thing to like, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, and as well, we'll come back to maybe some of the in inverted commas older stuff, and I'll include my car in that in a minute. But you've also got some of the headline drivers from this year's WRC there as well.
Again, I mean, I can't, you know, I have to take my hat off. We work closely with a chap called Warner Lewis, which I'm sure some of your listeners and some of you guys are probably familiar with as well. And he runs a club called Rallying History, and he has really helped us this year. He's a good friend of Yari, Matty Latvala, and again, when that was confirmed, we were absolutely couldn't believe that he was going to be coming. That's a great name to have, and obviously, I've already confirmed Stig Blomqvist, who you know, again, he's an absolute legend in his own right. But then you start adding people like Yari on, and then Optanek, and then of course our local homegrown champion as well in Elfin. So I mean, there's something for everyone just there, isn't there, really?
Yeah, there definitely is. But that's what I was going to say. You've got quite a cross-section of appeal, haven't you? Because as well as the current stuff, we've got, you know, rally cars from right through the era, but also quite an assortment of really exciting road cars to see.
Yeah, I mean, the show, again, is made up, you know, it's made up of over 1,000 privately owned cars as well. So that could be rally cars. Some of those are competitive, some of them aren't competitive anymore. Some of them, like yourself, you know, ex-WRC cars or championship winning cars. And some just, you know, privately owned, well looked after Subarus and things like that. So there is literally something for everyone at this event. And we, you know, it is a good cross section. And I think, you know, we always, you know, tip our hat and have a nod to the old, the golden era, the days of God, which we all grew up with, I'm sure. And like I said, I like to stick. I mean, you know, that's a man that people still want to see go sideways.
And just an amazing character who, you know, people are still in awe, been around, you know, the likes of Stig Blomqvist. So it's great to have him there.
Yeah.
I mean, we know of Castle Coombe as a race circuit. Obviously, that's the core business, if you like. So how big is Rally Day now in terms of Castle Coombe?
It's probably our biggest event. We have a couple other events that are sizable, and hopefully, he says, if the sun shines, we should see somewhere between 12,000 and 14,000 people here on Saturday. It's been steadily increasing over the last few years. To give you a little bit of background, Castle Coombe bought the event off of the previous organisers. There was a gentleman called Brian Stubbings, who sadly passed away about 3 years ago, and he founded the event with Darren Froh, who they had a good relationship with the circuit, and unfortunately it got a bit much for the family and the people around them. So they approached my MD and said, would we like to take it on? And I got involved, and obviously, like anything, we want to see it grow, we want to see it build.
And I think getting it to building, and I suppose engaging people, Tom, like M Sport, and obviously I suppose it's easier these days because M Sport UK based, when we've lost all those other World Rally teams that are around us. But I guess having M Sport to fly the flag for you, does that help engage other people and make other people want to be part of it as well?
Yeah, I mean, that's the hardest thing. I on a daily basis, all year round, I get Facebook messages and emails with people saying, oh, can't you just bring the Citroen team here? Oh, can't you just bring the Toyota Gazoo team here? Unfortunately, it's not that simple. They all have their own busy schedules. These cars are relatively rare. You know, they only have a few each. It's not like they've got them in abundance. And, you know, it takes a lot of time and money for teams to do this. They've all got their own budgets and things that they're doing. And again, like I said, you know, if you've got, World Rally cars or anyone with World Rally cars, even the older ones take a considerable amount of maintenance and time to cost a lot of money to run. So, yeah, it to have M Sport on board is fantastic, and what we do hope is it's going to build. And having Yari here is brilliant because obviously, you know, it makes other teams sit up and look. And I'm hoping that Toyota may think, you know, do you know what? It'd be a great place to showcase next year. They've actually sent down a really it's a one-off Yaris road going race tuned Yaris. I drove it this morning, actually. I probably shouldn't say that off the truck, but what a little well, I tell you now, that is a cracking 280 brake horsepower, lightweight Yaris road going car. Fantastic. So they're all getting back into it, which is fantastic as well. You know, I think, you know, we will remember the days of the, you know, of the Subarus and the McRae Subarus and all those different sort of things. And that seemed to drop away. And I think they're getting back into that. And that's what we want to see.
Absolutely. You mentioned the McRae Subaru there. There's the McRae tribute there, of course, as well.
Yes, there is. We put up a huge banner. Stuart Blair of Sirius McRae Club, bless him, has done an absolutely outstanding job of gathering up these cars. We couldn't have done it without him. And he sent me down a big banner. Where he got it from, I'm not going to ask, but it's a huge Colin tribute banner, and we've put that up. We're going to have, the cars are going to be going out on track at 11 for a nice big display. We had a special commemorative sticker made this year as well. And, you know, we've been in close contact with the family. Jimmy's a great supporter of the event, and unfortunately, you know, it's very raw for them still, but they completely are on board with what we're doing and very pleased. Like I said, it's very sad, but also we've got to look back and move on at the same time as well.
Absolutely. Well, Tom, I'm hoping you're going to have a week off next week, because this must be the most stressful period of your life.
Do you know what? I wish it was the case, but actually we've got an event the following week, and it's the Mini Action Day. And again, I got a phone call this week from Mini Sport, and they're bringing their WRC Mini, would you believe? They couldn't make it for Rally Day, but they're bringing it to the Mini Sport Mini Action Day next week. So rallying continues.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I know Daniel Harper and the guys up there, and I've worked with them fantastic. In the past, and they've got some tremendous kits. So yeah, if you can't get down there this weekend, get down and see the minis the following weekend. But Tom, listen, we really, really do appreciate your time. We know possibly it is the really most stressful point when you're still setting up and everything else, but we just thought it'd be great to just tell our listeners what's going on down there.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Happy days. Listen, Tom, have a well-earned break, please, after the mini event, and we'll catch up with you again soon, okay?
Thanks so much for your time. Thank you, guys.
No worries at all. Tom Davis from Rally Days, thanks for joining us on Absolute Rally, and we'll be back after this break.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Click motorsportauctions.com. Now, one of the world's leading motorsport online classified adverts and auction sites. It's easy to use, providing listing platforms that enable you to sell race and rally cars, surplus parts, transporters, clothing, workshop, and pit equipment. We specialize in cataloging, listing, and selling large quantities of motorsport-related surplus and obsolete stock. Click motorsportauctions.com. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally, and welcome back to a former guest. We've not had him on for a little while. Man currently sat second overall in the standings in the Canadian Rally Championship, and he's doing it in a production car. But there's only one man who could probably do that. It's Crazy Leo, Crazy Leo. Look, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Good afternoon, Tony. Good afternoon, listeners. It is awesome to be back. And as always, great podcast, great passion for rallying. It's cool to talk to you guys.
Happy days. Listen, a great result last weekend. I don't want to talk about last weekend just yet. Obviously, look at the results and the standings and stuff like that. You're doing a fantastic job at the moment. You made the decision this year to go with production car. And obviously going up against the open cars and things like that. Just tell our listeners a little bit about how your season's gone.
Yeah, well, we were lucky enough to get a new car built with Kenjam Motorsports. And they also, we've done our research, and we decided, despite it being a new car, we decided to go with a 2007 chassis, because those are slightly lighter and we have all the development spare parts. So yeah, and it's all about living the dream and going as fast as possible through the corners. That's if one thing I learned in the World Championship, it's not about the overall power, it's how fast you can go through the corners. So decided to go production class, got a bit of support for that. And yeah, we were very lucky so far. We still had to miss one round due to just budget, because that was a far away out, like Western round. And then another one, we had an electrical glitch where the car shot off at 184 kilometers an hour at night over a blind crest, like the car and lights shut off. That's a separate story.
Wow.
But other than that, we're still leading production championship. And like you said, lucky enough to be second overall.
Well, I was just about to say, because that's something doing. Obviously, you're up against the might of the factory, you know, Subaru Canada team, of course, which is the guys at Paris-Chard and Rocket Racing, obviously, with Anton Lesage driving that car. Has the secret been to be consistent, obviously, to be second overall with the problems you've just mentioned? It's still, you know, it's still very, very good. You know, there's not a lot in it, really, is there?
No, it's only 5 points behind. Now, to be honest, second overall is due to their mechanical problems for two rallies. But like I said, we've also effectively DNF'd too. So we're very close. There's a bunch of guys close to each other. And the other guys in the open class cars we're beating, that are, some of them are also ran by Petr Schard, we're just a little bit quicker. But with Antoine, it's impossible to beat them in a production car. We're talking 300 pounds heavier, 200 horses less, and, you know, that kind of stuff. Look, I mean, I believe, and Antoine is a good friend and a mentor to me still, and a teacher. So we've just discussed the cars and the pace he's going. We don't think anybody could touch that car could touch him in the production car. So I'm kind of steady second, and I'm happy with it. I'm still pushing as hard as I can. It's not really about trophies as much. It's about learning. I'm still just after a pretty long break and rallying. I'm still getting back to proper pace notes, and I'm lucky finally I have a co-driver who we work with very well together with. Yeah, so it's good, and I'm not backing off because I want to just maximize the experience. And hey, if we'll end the result, we'll end the championship.
Absolutely. Now, as you say, you have had a little bit of time off. You've come back with a plan this year. You did this unique thing of obviously auditioning your co-drivers. Your co-driver is a co-driver we know well. He's been on this program, and he sat with, you know, many, many people who I know over here in the UK, which is Alex Karani, of course, an American. He's settled into the seat now. You guys seem to be working well. There was a little bit more of a long-term strategy to this appointment, and with your rallying now, isn't there, Leo? We'll just tell our listeners a little bit more about what we're trying to achieve moving forward from 2017.
Yes, well, the rapport between driver and co-driver is crucial. We're working very well together, but it's still only three events together. Of course, after three seasons together, you'd work a lot better. But when we started working with Alex, I told him how it is. I'm one of those guys who's very passionate about rallying, but I don't have the budget to be where I want to be. So the goal is get back to the world championship and something, you know, cost-effective like an R2, hopefully, and maybe not do something as extensive as we've done back in 2014 with the Drive D-Mac, but a few rallies, maybe two rallies next year. We're thinking Finland and Germany. I love Germany. Just the uniqueness of vineyards and the military stages. And then Finland, who doesn't love Finland, right?
Absolutely.
So that's a bit of a long term, if we can pull it off. If not, I still own a recce car in Europe. It's an old VW Golf, but it has some good suspension and so on. So we'll go do some recces at the very least, and we'll see what happens in Canadian Championship next year. But really, it's all about, even if you don't have the budget, but you have the passion, you'll always find a way. Even going there and doing recces at the world level, it's still pretty cool, and you get to meet the teams, talk to other drivers, and still good experience.
Absolutely, absolutely. Have you cast an eye across the border and looked at what's going on with the new championship over in the States, the American Rally Association? Does that perhaps has a little bit of a lure to take Crazy Leo across the border?
Well, first of all, I love what they're doing because main thing, they finally have two-pass recce. So I hope that will allow some American drivers come through and find, you know, and like become quicker, because as much as there's a lot of people, well, yeah, U.S. has 10 times more population than Canada. There's a lot of good teams there. However, all the drivers who are fast from the U.S., they've either competed a lot in Canada or in Europe, because in the U.S. only, you weren't able to do recce. So I'm loving what they're doing with the recce. Overall, the championship is good, too. It's, you know, our friends, a former co-driver of mine as well, they're kind of putting it together. It's a non-profit. So I love what they're doing. There's one event that I specifically like, STPR. It's challenging. Other events to me are a little bit kind of maybe too easy, like a little too straight, especially after seeing European roads. So if I'd go there, I'd definitely try to go for STPR.
Wow. Wow. Well, there's new things happening over there. I think with the cars as well, things quite exciting. I know, I think it's Barry McKenna, I think, has done some Canadian rounds as well in his former Super 2000 car, which of course has now got a Will Rally car engine in it as well. And I think he's also, he's done some of the Canadian rounds this year as well, hasn't he?
he did do defeat. Unfortunately, he had a good lead, which was great to see. But then with that big lead, he still maybe pushed a little too hard. I'm not sure. He wrecked some of the suspension and went off the road on one of the tougher stages. We actually had a section there to back off because it was like newly graded road, and there was a high chance of rocks getting pulled out on the second pass. So we had the luxury, I guess, to back off. He wasn't lucky like that, but yeah, so his pace was amazing though. Like, it's definitely a good driver.
I was going to say, it's exciting because we're getting other cars in as well now, of course, because, you know, historically, obviously, it's been really strong for the likes of Subaru. Obviously, you know, you're using a Subaru now, but I guess for the champion, both championships, both the Canadian and, you know, the American Rally Association, it's good to see some new shapes and new cars and different, you know, different drivers coming in, isn't it? And of course, you know, Barry's a guy who's competed over here in the UK. Gives you guys also somebody new to benchmark yourself against.
It is exactly right. One thing I wish for, though, is if we were all in the same car. Like, again, I've said this many times, like it was in the Drive D-Mac, an identical car, that was the best. Here, it was great to see stage times and stuff, but you don't know. Like, it's not even a World Rally Car engine. It's a 2-point-something liter engine. So it's, like, maybe similar to what Ken Block used to have, like even World Rally Car Plus kind of pace. Yeah. And to see Antoine Lestage trying to beat that in a pretty much regular open class Subaru, it's just hard to say, still hard to benchmark yourself because of such difference in equipment.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, you're at the midway point of the Canadian Rally Championship. You've got three events to go. Is the budget in place for you to complete the season?
There's two events out west, which I don't have the budget for, and there's one in Canada, which I do. So we'll just see what happens. I might even trailer the car myself to one of the western events and go without crew, just drive slowly just to cruise to production win, like literally one set of tires. But again, it's all fine. I'm not complaining. At least I'm rallying.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, listen, you know, we're always fascinated to what's going on in different parts of the world. And it's great when you reach out to us and let us know what's going on. When you know a little bit more about your plans for Europe, you'll come back and talk to us about it, won't you?
Oh, with pleasure. Speaking of what's going on in different parts, you know what else I'm very excited about in the States, and possibly this is going to happen in Canada? They're now limiting those crazy open class cars. You know how there's open class cars and then there's 500,000 plus open class car, like what Ken Block used to run, what Subaru Canada, David Higgins, and then Travis, what they run. Now, I understand that it's with the agreement of Subaru USA, they are trying to limit those crazy cars. They've already limited them on tires, on certain other things like weight and so on. So yeah, I'm hoping that they'll bring it down a little bit, so it's not going to be, you know, all crazy cars at the top and guys with a little less equipment could still compete.
Well, I hope so, but that is rallying, as we all know. You know, there's always going to be the bigger cars at the top, and obviously the chance to go and chase those cars down and something a little bit less is always a good little bit of inspiration as well. But I guess they've tried to do it in the States this year, haven't they? I think they've put smaller restrictors in, they've limited the number of tires and things like that. I think there's been some weight that they've also added to the cars as well, which again is still meant that you've had two Subarus fighting at the front. But I know the guys at ARA are desperately obviously trying to level things out, and I think the new machinery coming in, I think we're going to see some Fiestas out in the American Championship, and as I say, possibly some Fiestas out in the Canadian Rally Championship as well, and I think that all bodes well. And if it raises the profile, Leo, it can only help you find budget as well.
That is correct. Yep.
Listen, it's always great to talk to you, Leo. Before I let you go, you're never sure of an opinion or anything else. Do you have any other business for us? You know how we like to do in any other business. Have you got anything else you want to get off your chest with regards to rallying at the moment?
Well, one dream, probably second biggest dream besides me getting back to the World Championship is to see Sebastian Loeb back.
Okay, this goes against my co-host, who's not with us, obviously, in this section, Jack Benyon. He's a massive Sebastian Loeb fan, and he feels he doesn't need to ruin his legacy of what he's achieved in the sport. But you'd like to see him back then, Leo?
Oh yeah, for sure, and have another go with Ogier and all that stuff. But you know, obviously, it's great to talk about these things and disagree sometimes. I was never a huge fan of Michael Schumacher until he actually returned. And yes, some people said that he's ruined his legacy because after he returned for, what, 3 years, he never really won. But that showed the true passion. That yep. showed that it doesn't matter if he couldn't win at that point. He loved the damn sport so much that he kept at it. That's what I personally really liked.
No, you know what? I'll have that point. I will take that point. And you know, I just wonder whether, you know, the sport has changed a little bit, even in that period. You know, I we're assuming, obviously, you know, Daniel Elliner will be coming back with him as well, whether he needs to find a new co-driver, whether Daniel wants to come out of retirement. I think there's still a lot of twists and turns to see whether Sebastian will come back. Sebastian Loeb, obviously, will come back and will come back in a full, you know, factory program, or whether it's going to be a limited. We made some references last week, and I think the week before, Leo, with regards to whether it's sponsors that want to see the Loeb name on the window again, because Citroën have had such a tough time, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is tough, and of course, having him for the test was a bit of a good tease. But yeah, who knows? And like I said, that's a dream, right? Doesn't necessarily gonna come through, but that's something I would love to see.
Absolutely. Well, listen, hopefully, if you're back in the WRC next year, Sebastian Loeb could be. You never know. You could bump into him on a recce, Leo.
That is true. Thank you.
Listen, Leo, stay in touch. It's a pleasure to have you on. And yeah, we'll catch up with you again soon.
Thanks. Have a good one and keep spreading the passion for rally.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Folks, we're going to go to a little break and then we're going to come back with Simon Mooney from Pace Notes Rally Magazine.
This is Absolute Rally, Pace Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good newsagents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally, the final episode, the final section of this particular season. It was very apt we get the man on who, without, let's be honest, we wouldn't be here. It's the man from Pace Notes, the man behind Pace Notes, Simon Mooney. Welcome back to Absolute Rally, Si.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks to have us on again. It's great, yeah.
Well, it's been quite exciting because you're a busy man. Pace Notes is flying, it's fair to say. There's been loads of interesting stuff, which I've been making reference to recently because a lot of our listeners enjoy the retro stuff that's going on as well. And we try to do a little bit of retro stuff in our podcast, and I keep threatening this F2 yep. special, which people keep teasing me about. Trust me, folks, it is coming. I promise you, I'm already working on it. But it's something that you guys have followed. And I tried to get you last week, and, you know, international superstar that you are, I got a message back saying, sorry, Tony, in America with rally cars. And I thought, I need to know more about this. So, Simon, what were you doing in America with rally cars?
Very easy. Answering a call. I mean, if a multimillionaire phones you and says, Simon, I've got probably one of the best collections of X-Works of Arth rally cars, would you be interested in coming over and photographing them? I think it took me all of a breath to say yeah. Yes, I would. So to prefer, as a guy called John Campion, I suppose a lot of the Irish listeners will know who John is. He's the, I suppose, the sponsor and the if you like, the founding, nearly enough the founding father of Team Ireland, which would be the governing body in Ireland. It's their version of, if you like, the MSA Academy and that sort of thing. So yeah. So he has built up an amazing collection of Abarth cars, and he knows, or he did find out, I think it was through Zab, that I'm a bit of a Lancia. Not, as you know, an Evo myself, and he phoned me, and honestly, I went over. It sounds glamorous, but believe me, it wasn't. He lives in Florida, and of course, as everybody knows, last week, Hurricane Irma was there, so it was going to be a nice trip. A day of interviewing, a day to get the meet, and then a day at the shop with a photographer, a great photographer, and then maybe a couple of days to myself on the beach, but it didn't turn out that way, Tony. As I was looking, I was getting notifications from Aer Lingus, who I fly from direct from Dublin. They were cancelling flights a bit further down in Miami and in Tampa, and it was coming up, and I thought, time to get out of here. But hey, what a collection of cars. I mean, I'll give you a rundown. I mean, you'll see it all. I mean, it's a special shoot. We try always to do something really nice for our Christmas yearbook at the end of the year. But to give you a bit of a snip, I mean, he has a Fulvia. These are all ex-Barth cars, all fully documented and an amazing provenance with all the cars. He has a Fulvia. He has a Stratos. He has an 037. He has a 131 Mayfiore. He has the S4 Delta Group B car, and he has the, which I think is the best one, which is the Delta Integrale that Mickey Biaggio won the 84 World Championship in. So, and he has a host of other beautiful cars. I think a collection, I don't know, I was trying to count it up in my head, it's probably worth about 15 million, do you know what I mean? But,
jeez.
But the interesting thing, Tony, is he's really happy to get those cars out. He wants people to know about them. We know there's lots of lovely metal about in sheds and all over the place, all over the world. But this guy's happy enough to let people like myself come over, take them out for a drive. And we took them all out and had a run. And yeah, whatever you need. And it's just so accommodating, so generous, I suppose, with his time and with his collection, more importantly. And it's something I really hope the readers will love when they get to see it at Christmas time.
Well, there's two things that spring out there. Now, I don't whinge on about this at all, far from it, because I love doing what we do. But there's a lot of stuff that we try to do as live, so it happens. It feels like it's happened that week and it goes into the podcast. And some of the features we've done sometimes will have been recorded maybe a few weeks before. And it's hard to get stuff, but that just shows the dedication of the fact that you've already got your Christmas issue well on its way, and you flew to America to make it happen, which is...
Well, we have to, Tony. That's
yeah.
I mean, the nature of it is we're a small family-run business. We don't have we're not a big corporation behind us. It's a small team of five people dedicated, and we have about 20 freelancers. But we have to be, you know, to be able to hit above our weight like we do, we have to be fairly clued in and plan ahead. I mean, our feature cars, we would run a feature car. It's called In My Garage every month, and we've started to actually do two a month. But we already have cars already done, photographed in the bag, probably through to about January, February of next year, do you know what I mean? So, and people are always phoning us, and as you see more and more people, listen, I've got this, would you be interested in this? And then we're trying to say, okay, we've done a Mark II, you know, 3 months ago, look, maybe time for another one. Guys, just across, I mean, rallying, we just love Mark IIs, and we always like a Mark II on our cover. But he said, no, we had one a few months ago, let's leave it for another, you know, let's leave it in the middle of next year, spring next year. But we get all sorts of stuff. I mean, this month, they were about to go to print tomorrow with their latest edition, and it's got a modified 106 Peugeot. So it just looks like an ordinary 106, but believe you me, it is like, and it's not a Super 16 car or anything at all, but my goodness, it's faster, and it has got every trick in the book that you could think about. And this guy, Alan Castles, is just mad about them, mad about the cars, and he's done everything that he can, worked hard, earned every shilling, and he's put every shilling back into his Peugeot to make it the best Peugeot that he can possibly make it, without a banning X-Works car, Tony, you know. So things like that, yeah, you know, you have to work ahead when we're just a small team, you know.
Absolutely.
That's just the way we
go. Now, we've got to go back to, you were quite, dare I say, blasé about the fact that you're in America. You've got this wonderful collection of Arbath cars and you go out and drive them. Now, yeah. We need to understand this because this is a privileged position. You know, obviously we got Ryan Champion. We know he's got an ex-work car. It's been mentioned once or twice. In fact, it's part of the Absolute Rally bingo game, which people like to play from time to time. Anyway, in fact, he's got two ex-work cars now. So ex-works is something which is becoming, I suppose it is becoming a bit of a thing. People do want to have things. We had Mark Higgins on the program last week and he's got his old ex-works Nova. Tucked away.
Yeah.
He's threatening to restore that and get that back out. But to actually go out and drive these cars, what did you get to drive them all, Si, or was it just one or two? Did you just get to go out in the Integrale?
He said to me, look, you drive, and he has full-time mechanic working there in a shop. We call the workshop, but it's American, it's all a shop. And Andrew, his mechanic, is just full-time there, working, fiddling with the cars. Just you take whatever out you want. John was there. So look, I drove the Fulvia, the Stratos, the Delta, but now the S4 and the 037. The 037 in particular is an absolute monster. It actually took about 20 minutes to get everything up to temperature before the gearbox would even work. You couldn't even select first gear until the gear oil, do you know what I mean? That's his next thing that he's looking at, is to try and get some equipment, do you know what I mean? So, you know, preheating everything, do you know what I mean, before he would take it out. So I did let John drive that, do you know what I mean? And I did let him drive the S4. For a fact of a reason, Tony, I didn't fancy scrapping a £50,000 or £60,000 gearbox. You know what I mean? So, not so much about driving. I mean, I'll tell you another thing. This is how good the guy is. Like, the cars obviously aren't road legal. It's not like in the UK we have to have an MOT or something. These cars are sitting pristine. Now, what he has done, he has restored the outside. So if it needed like a paint or whatever, he did. For instance, inside the Delta, the co-driver's notes, have notes of how to run the different bits and pieces in the kit are all stuck on scraps of piece of paper with duct tape, right back from the 80s, and it's all still there. The original seats are still there. You know, so these aren't things that are going to go out and compete anytime soon. They're all period, you know, exactly as it was, basically cleaned, but exactly as it was. So I just said, look, you know, no harm, happy to drive the Delta and the Stratus and bits and pieces. Stratus is an amazing car. But the 037 and the S4, it was just actually intimidating, Tony. I've been in lots of cars. I'm not blowing either, like, but I've been in lots of World Rally cars and lots of drivers and two saves and everything. But to get into that car, it's just an attack on your senses. It really is. Those cars are just, they're noise. There's no anti-lag. There's no, you know, all sorts of things. They are just raw. They're actually quite agricultural, actually, in a way, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they're just raw. And I actually, you know, I don't think they're as fast as, they're certainly not as fast as modern day cars, rally cars, nowhere near it. But it's the attack on the senses. I mean, the back wheels on the 03, are not the 03, on the S4 Delta, they're like Formula 1 cars.
Yeah.
Cars, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The width of them on the back. But he is good. Like, take him out of the workshop and it goes onto like a 3-lane highway outside his shop. Of course, what did he do? Phone the sheriff's office, booked two officers for about 4 hours so we could go runs in the car. So a black and white, you know, a typical black and white police car with the lights on the front, it goes out, it just drives out in front of us in the 3 lanes, stops all the traffic, and an unmarked big Jeep with all the lights on the inside with smoked out glass, it goes in front of us and gives us about 300 yards to play with. Do you know what I mean?
Wow.
And just normally, day to day traffic, wherever you want to go, we'll take them wherever you want to do. So fantastic. So, like, it was a dream come true for me to be Lancia Nut. And honestly, sometimes you have to pinch yourself and, oh, I can't believe, you know, I've done it. Do you know what I mean? The only thing, wish you could have stayed a bit longer, do you know what I mean, in Florida and enjoyed a bit more. But sure, I'm just glad that, you know, the storm was over. There was no damage to the workshop, no flooding near the workshop. And, you know, and all his friends and his mechanics and stuff, and there's no damage down their house and stuff because they had an awful time, you know.
Brilliant. Yeah, of course. Now, can I ask you, I know how much of a Lancia nut you are. I know you've got a Delta as well, and we spoke about Deltas before. That one of my very first heroes was Kankinen in the Delta. So yeah. I remember that clear as day, probably more so than more recent cars, funnily enough. Now they say never meet your heroes. Okay. Now does it apply to the same to rally cars? And what I mean is by that, you got to drive your hero. And what I mean is by that, you got to drive the Lancia Delta Integrale. Now, did it live up?
That's a really hard question. I would say yes and no.
Okay.
I was a bit, now I had the boost down a wee bit. You know, when you're driving it, Tony, you know, I wasn't driving it aggressively. You know, I suppose like all those cars, all those Group A cars and even a WRC car, you have to drive them aggressively to get the best out of them, do you know what I mean? And,
yeah.
And I've been in lots of tests with drivers and you go, wow. Now, you know, maybe if I had the chance to take it on a stage or something like that, or, you know, you maybe got to feel it a bit more. But certainly what I did, I mean, the smell of it, you know what I mean? You know, you can nearly feel the years of sweat, the gear oil, the fuel, you know, for just for that. It's fantasy land, do you know what I mean? So from that point of view, yeah, I was glad I met my hero, do you know what I mean? Yes, I've sat in faster stuff and more modern stuff, and I've been frightened with different stuff, but there's a bit more fear and trepidation in this that, you know, you could take a World Rally car, Tony, and you could trash it, but you could go buy another one or build another one. That Delta, it's the only Delta that won the World Championship, do you know what I mean?
In 84. Of course.
So that is something unique. And funny enough, he used to be a Ferrari man. John used to be a Ferrari man, and he had every Ferrari, right, going right back, Dino's, you know, Daytona's, right up through the F40s and everything else. He had nearly enough the full set. And I sold them all, and I says, why? He says, because he had no emotional attachment to them. And you can see why, and it's because if you were to rack a Dino, you could go, if there's enough money, you could go and buy another one.
Yeah.
But with that Delta and his S4, you know, it doesn't matter how much money in the world you have, you can't go and buy another one, do you know what I mean? So, and it's just a special part of history. It's a sport, I love this sport, and it's a special wee part of that, do you know what I mean? Like my all time hero, you're talking about heroes driver wise, still living, my hero of all time would be Tommy Mäkinen. I just think he's a ledge, do you know what I mean? Because I think more than anybody else, I mean, look, I love McRae and what he stood for and Burnsy and stuff, but, you know, Mäkinen was the man, because I look at it, in all the years, the championships that he won, he was competing against, you know, five or six other world champions at the same time, do you know what I mean? And to me, that says it all, do you know what I mean?
No, absolutely.
And that sort of brings, you know, and it's no different as well. Look, there's Keith, my goodness, four times BRC champion, but probably his best victory was when he beat Higgy. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, and that's not to degrade any other competition or whatever happens to be, but in the time, Higgy was the man to beat, and Cronin Keith went out and done it, do you know what I mean? So it's fantastic for him, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that brings us quite nicely round to the fact that, folks, we are going to have another competition. We've done stuff with Dirt, of course, the guys at Codemasters. We've done giveaways there, but we're going to do a year's subscription to Pace Notes. Again, without Pace Notes, we wouldn't be here, but we're actually going to give you the year's subscription to it. But I thought it'd be quite fitting for Simon himself to set the question. So,
ooh,
Simon,
hit
me with the question.
Okay, I'll go with the current one then. Okay, I sort of half hint that out of there, so if anybody that's listening has a good chance of winning. Keith Cronin won his first BRC title, okay? But tell us, who did he beat in that first, when he won his first British Rally Championship, all right? Who did he beat? Who then finished runner-up behind Keith Cronin? How's about that?
There you go. I'm sure it's an easy one to find out, but by the same token, folks, you know how to find us. If you email studio@absoluterally.co.uk, that's how we want your answers to come in, and we'll do a prize draw on the first episode back after our little break. But there you go. So so yeah, Simon, listen, mate, thank you so much for coming on, because I know you're a busy man, and it's deadline day tomorrow for getting the publication out. So we appreciate your time, and of course we appreciate your support as well, because without you, as I say, we wouldn't be here.
I always try and do what I can, Tony, so no problem at all, buddy. 100%.
Happy days, folks. From both Simon, myself, Jack and Ryan, thank you all so much for downloading us this season. Keep spreading the love, keep spreading the word. We keep downloading the old episodes as well. I've noticed they're still going up, which is always great. You know where we live. It's @absolute_rally on Twitter and facebook.com/absoluterally. Enjoy your 2-week break. We'll be back in a couple of weeks now.